I say thank you to everybody from Ovale and Paul in particular for inviting me, and to Sarah's powerful poetry. That line, "In the face of something too large to see," is a description of, in one sense, what's happening to the water and to the oceans, but in another sense, it describes what we all see when we hear and see poetry at its best. So thank you to Sarah, and thank you to everybody. Mary Heaney said there's no such thing as a short poetry reading, but I'll keep it as unlong as I can. These poems are all going to be from a collection called On Water. There are a few at the back available, some are even unsigned. And I've taken a kind of a liberal view of the idea that this is about water, the theme of this is about water. So the first poem is a poem, I suppose, loosely based around the biblical story of the wedding feast of Cana, when, as you recall, water was turned into wine. Most of us do the reverse miracle later on in the evening. But so if you imagine somebody along the lines of, I don't know if you remember Keeping Up Appearances, Hyacinth Bouquet. Yeah, if you remember someone, if you can imagine someone like her attending, anyway, you'll get the picture. So a wedding guest. We stay just outside Cana, which is actually a very pretty town, although the military seemed to be everywhere. The weather on the day was perfect. I wore my new papyrus shoes, and the bride looked absolutely radiant. Her dress cost a small fortune. They did choose to serve the best wine last, after a slight delay, but the customs they have here are different, as Zach explained. Still, it did seem rather odd, as did that young man, the woman by his side, his mother, I believe, who spoke to the stewards, so quiet and assured, as they fussed over the ewers. The group with him were whispering about a sign. A rough lot they were, but the wine tasted divine. So as I say, I have liberally interpreted the idea of water and the theme of the sea. And this next poem is a poem based on a burger joint in Kinsale. I'm sure many of you know Kinsale. We used to go on holidays there, and the question that used to be asked was, are you married or do you live in Kinsale? There was this wonderful burger joint, which I think is still there. And myself and my younger sister and my younger sister's friend, who was gorgeous, who I just realized when I was the age I was that she was gorgeous, used to queue up outside this burger joint, which was called the Lusitania. The Lusitania. Hiss of grill would scratch your eyes out. We kept our distance at the counter as we waited for charred glories served by John Joe, burger meister, furnace-faced, and blowing like a stoker from the ship he'd named this shack for, torpedoed in an earlier war. Behind me, stifled giggles, my younger sister, 13, treacherous, her best friend, BJ, who'd taken on new cargo, last year the Bunty, this year Bardo, winking back at John Joe as he handed out the baps. We licked our chops, prepared to eat our hearts out, wounds spurting ketchup onto death in ancient Greece. One lovesick glance, another fleet sailing for Troy on gusts of onion breath. this next poem also features my sister and it recall, but in a slightly kind of darker setting. It recalls our history as a family to some extent. We spent an awful lot of time sailing together, mutinously and otherwise. And so I suppose it talks about lighthouses, but it talks about other things as well, I hope. Anyway, it's called Easter Island. My mother lit the lamp beside the statue of Our Lady, her knees stiffening in the month of May, as she begged us say the rosary each night. And I would nudge my giggling little sister and recite the joyful mysteries we learnt on summer voyages. Bailey, Fastnet, Tusker, Hook, Old Head, as we sailed on leaky boats and not so holy family, waving as we passed to those keepers of the light patrolling the murette, who always, always would wave back. I grew up. I read in books how many souls those cheery men had saved, and learned as well how hard it was to place my faith in one who claimed to be the light, but who only looked on as crops failed and planes fell from the sky, who would allow the lump within my sister's breast to bloom. We waited for a sign, news from the hospital, my mother on her knees once more, lighting candle after candle, the nave ablaze with flame in a church that now was empty. Once during the chemo, I saw her lift off her bandana and shuddered at the terror of her head laid bare. I thought of Easter Island, its lonely shore named for the promise of an afterlife by other sailors who'd also lost their way and could not believe the brute heads looming over them as they beached rowboats in the sand, stone deities they could not account for as they wondered what they might find next and were afraid. Hey, he says you can't hear me, which is rare, but anyway, I'll just go back. The sequence on water includes a sequence called On Water. As I say, they were based on stories from the Bible. Whether you buy into them or not, they're good stories. But this is one, this is the title poem called On Water. And many of you will have been at the beach in charge of a young child, or you've been beside a family, you've been in charge of a young child, and suddenly the child goes missing. Oh, where's he gone? What's happened? And everyone goes into a panic. And so this was, I suppose, trying to imagine what it must have been like when Mary took Jesus to the beach. Anyway, it's called On Water. I'd seen it happen years ago, back when he was just a child, couldn't have been more than 8. I'd warned him, stay close to the shore, don't go deeper than your knees. But even then, he had this way of doing what he thought was right. My back was turned, his baby sister red-cheeked in the heat, and he was gone. I panicked, ran down to the edge, screamed his name in fright, until I saw him going out with the tide, walking on water. Little splashes as he skipped from wave to wave, astonished fishes leaping underneath his feet. Arms stretched wide, he smiled back, showing how easily it was done, which it was, compared with what was yet to come. I read a poem called The Wave. This is about the Fastnet yacht racing disaster in 1979, and years later, I was on it, but years later, I saw the wood carving by Hokusai of the great wave of Kanagawa. I'm sure you all know it, the kind of little boats and the huge wave. And anyway, this, you know, as I say, it took 30 years to write this poem, and I hope it was worth it. Anyway, this is called The Wave. Grizzled mainsail trimmer off a Yankee clipper, the only one to call it. Cloudless August morning, the shoreside calf. Something big out there in the Atlantic. Southern drawl amid sweet afton. Waft of last night's beer, bitching about skippers over eggs and bacon. Tinkling masts, the gleam and spank of sail, yachts prancing in the harbour, courses plotted for the rock. No runic satellite, no merry weatherman could then foretell the mangled spars, the drifting empty hulls. The sodden bodies hauled aboard by trawlers, the others never found, lists taped up in windows near the greasy spoon where that old salt had seen what Hokusai saw beyond the geishas and the fish markets of Edo, his own floating world as he leaned over a woodblock carved from cherry to make this picture of the wave off Kanagawa, out of nowhere, a rumble in the ocean, foam-flecked surge gathering in the arc of its own rage into a roar of water, brute beauty trembling above the wooden sampans, the cowering men poised, ready to sweep everything away. I'll do three more. Again, the idea of the sea is I'm using it elastically, but many of us, I'm sure, have made the journey from Ireland to England. Some of you may have done it from Cork, or I certainly did it from Dublin, but by train then across to Wales, and then by train to London. And it's a rite of passage, and it's a wrong of passage as well. And it's a grim experience in some respects, but of course you're the better for doing it, although you don't think that at the time. Anyway, this is a poem called The Blue Man, and it's about that experience, I hope. I think some of them may have been on the duty free already. Yeah. The Blue Man, hulk of ferry, scream of gull, the Irish Sea behind in darkness, shaking her grey head. Pasty-faced in platform's sodium glare, we hefted rucksacks and suitcases, plastic bags of duty-free, the clunk and clink of grog and cig, stashed until engine stammer, whistle shriek, the rolling vowels of Wales and Cork. Train hauling its songs, station after station, like the faith we'd sworn we'd keep to fearful parents who pressed addresses into our small town hands. Cards marked, we played brag for the new money we jingled in our fingers, trying to weigh its sovereign otherness. And here comes England, a man in uniform, politely clipping tickets. His velvet midnight skin, the Irish suddenly made sense of. Miss O'Kelly at the blackboard drumming in the word for Negro on Far Gorham, the blue man who stands before us, asking if we know where we are going. Two more. A scrimshaw is one of these little ornaments that sailors, particularly whalers and whaling ships, made out of the tooths and bones of whales, the carved inscriptions and things on them. And so I suppose that's mainly what I spent a lot of my life trying to do, except not on whalebone, obviously, but scrimshaw. Anyway, this is a poem called Scrimshaw, and this is for my wife. Among the twisted innards, shock of crimson, he found this, a pause mid-flens to tuck into the pocket of the leaky oilskin he'd be drowned in later, the little stumpy tusk, 100 in that fearsome head, a tooth for every cask of viscous ooze becoming suds lathering a widow's hand, or oil soaking through wick, the hurricane lamp flickering beside him, nights on deck, on watch, boards sagging under the Leviathan dead, etching, scratching out, as I do now, this story. Clouds and masts, the tiny whaler following through waves, a plume of foam engraved on this keepsake I make that you may keep when I am all at sea, so far from home and so much water, as I chase down the latest poem that briefly surfaces off starboard to shouts, quivering blades, before descending once again into the unfathomable, deep, darker than ink, or any marks I might set down tonight, creak of moonlit rigging, the songs of long dead sailors carrying on a wind up from the south, salt gust on these chapped lips that long for yours. Thank you. Can I say thanks once again to everybody? Thank you, all of you, for your patience. Thanks again to Sarah. Thanks to all the other readers. I will never see the word Satan or Saturn again without thinking of dyslexia. You'll see that again somewhere else. So I know people who write poems about writing poems need to get out a bit more. I say that the connection of this to water is as tenuous as it gets. The poem is called The Ark, but it's really about my late uncle Brian O'Donnell, who ran the High B bar across the road. Yeah. And I have a t-shirt which says, I've been barred from the High B. It's a kind of, and I'm sure all of you, it's now a badge of honor now. So some of you will know everybody I meet who, when I say Brian O'Donnell was my uncle, they say, I'll tell you a story about Brian. And I look forward to hearing all your stories. This has some of them. I mean, some of you, I'm sure, will know the story about the Bernie Murphy, the sandwich man, who there was a sandwich board man, I beg your pardon, and they decided, and up in the High B, which, as you know, is on the first floor, which is so cool, that they would have him elected as a councillor, and so on, and so on. Brian. Anyway, so look, this is the last poem, and it's dedicated to the memory of the late, great Brian O'Donnell. And it's called, with a nod to Poetry on the Sea, The Ark. Past the sign that offers wigs for rent at Minahan's, the chemist, who still complains of rivulets of stout dribbling down into his shop, then in under the arch through which a man might ride a horse, and up the stairs, the same stairs Eddie Guest, true story, once stumbled on and fell and sued and lost. A door opening into an interior by Vermeer, light falling from a window on the left, lambent on the counter, the figures perched on high stools, nursing pints and chasers. The sense that some small thing is just about to happen here, where anything is possible, where merchant princes wait their turn, and Bernie Murphy, sandwich board man, becomes a city councillor. And you, mine host, presiding, gazing out across the bar at new arrivals before you amble over to pour another splash of what you've always loved to call a talent to abuse. A talent nurtured in another time when select bar meant no fools ever suffered, no interruptions tolerated to quiet, courteous drinking. The legends grew. How once, when he refused to remove it, you snipped off with the scissors a patron's garish tie. How tourists seeking merely coffee or a soft drink were briskly shown the door. Word was, nobody was anybody in this town until they'd been barred by you. Though at times, the person you most wanted to get rid of was yourself. Your own best customer. Dank afternoons alone, when the smoke-stained wooden panels closed in around you like a coffin, and you sank down to the dregs, down to the ocean floor at the bottom of your glass. Quit drinking, said the doctor. Quit while you're ahead. Who says I'm ahead? The return from the baseline, proving you can always tell a corkman, but you can't tell him much. Someday, the Lee's green waters will rise to swallow up all of these streets, Patrick Street and Winthrop, and this street too, Oliver Plunkett, our favorite bloody martyr. But when the deluge comes, if anything survives, it will be this place, an ark filled with chairs and tables from another turn of century ship, the picture signed by Einstein and the letter from Cole Porter, and 40 days and nights of classical and jazz and opera, enough even for you, a balding Noah in bifocals, still humming Shostakovich and insisting on good manners as the denizens stare out upon the lost world floating past, clinging on to Bernie Murphy's sandwich board. Thank you. Unsigned copies are 10. Signed copies are 5.
So John has just informed me that he has books here for sale, and the unsigned copies are 10 euros, and those that are signed are 5 euros. So another Much big rare. Round of applause and a massive thank you.
Also to Sarah Highness for a fabulous year.